Excellent. Well, I'm Christian Corley. He's James McLean and he's Brian Terranova. We have a full house there at the back, lady with the blue rinse. It's £6 to you for the single line. Yes, it's the podcast with a K, and we're here to discuss the Doctor falls. And then he gets back up again. And then he falls again.
He gets knocked down.
And then he gets up again. Yeah, yeah. I wish I'd thought of that now. Anyhow, yes. So, yes, that's pretty much how it went. Flipping out. That was a roller coaster ride of emotions and situations and surprises and spoilers that had been spoiled and things going on there. I really don't know where to start with this one. So, that's it. Series 10 is now done, to all intents and purposes, until Christmas, which will have then that extra episode to the end of season 10. But no, that's the end of the 12 episodes. That was episode 12.
And, well, I'll tell you what.
What?
I'll tell you where you can go, where we can start with this podcast.
Okay. With what? Inferno?
No, with all of our listeners, I think everyone should go back to our Series 8 finale and our Series 9 finale podcast and listen to those first. Because we'll have hit many of the same points we're going to talk about right here. So there you go.
Actually, what we should have done.
That's where we can all start.
What we should have done is exactly what Stephen Moffat did and basically create a podcast this week with bits of those two podcasts.
Yes, Christian.
You could even do that still.
Damn it.
Yes.
Insert little bits from those podcasts in here and see if people notice where they are.
Oh, that would be so great.
I've not heard him so excited in like, what, 3-4 years?
Well, Brian.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes. That's incredible. That is such a great plan. Okay.
Yes. So, right. Well, I'll get to work with that. And you guys just talk amongst yourselves. But yeah, I'll tell you, why don't we start with some comments from the listeners?
Yes,
go for it.
Because there's been a lot going on. As per last week, James, you won't know this because you were too busy for us mere mortals, but I ran a Twitter poll last week.
Right.
And it got nice reception, so I've done the same again this time.
Right.
And And here we go. So, the Doctor Falls poll. Terrible, great stuff. Moff's best finale. 4%, 4% terrible. 47% great stuff. 49% Moff's best finale. Now.
I like how your choices, though, sounded like somebody's actual review. Terrible, great stuff. Moff's best finale.
Well, you know, I mean, you guys may have seen my comments I've left in various threads on the Book of Faces, and I do think it is, for me, it's the first time that I've come away from any Doctor Who season finale not feeling disappointed.
Oh, I was. I thought it was terrible.
I'm not saying it was good. I'm saying it's the first time I've come away without feeling disappointed. Now, it may be that I'd measured my expectations better this time around. It may be because of that. It may be because after 7 years of Stephen Moffat, ladies and gentlemen, 7 years, maybe I've come to accept that there are restrictions to his writing. I was having a few thoughts to myself a little bit earlier and a bit of quiet time. And I was thinking about the Day of the Doctor, and it struck me that I now don't believe that Stephen Moffat wrote The Day of the Doctor single-handed.
Right.
I think there's too much going on in there. There's so many things there. There's the Tom Baker thing for a start off. Apparently, the BBC insisted on Tom Baker. Stephen Moffat didn't have any old Doctors in it, and they insisted on Tom Baker with him still being alive and still being the most recognisable Doctor. In DWM, there was an interview with Tom Baker at the time.
Yeah.
In which he said that he'd got up at like 5 a.m, got a train to Cardiff, got there very early, like 9, 10 o'clock probably, or something like that. And there was no one there to meet him. The only person who made the effort to find him was Matt Smith.
Yeah.
That says everything to me about what was going on behind the scenes in the Day of the Doctor. So if he didn't, you know, and also that section in the Day of the Doctor, it doesn't feel like Stephen Moffat. The dialogue doesn't feel like Stephen Moffat, so
Yeah, that would stand the reason then, because I remember after seeing it being surprised that he could have made such an enjoyable story despite even some issues within it. But yeah, I'm with you.
But then if I was to defend him, I would say that, and sort of defend him, there were so many politics and issues that led up to Day of the Doctor. You could almost say that the fact it didn't feel like one of his stories could have been part of that rather anarchic process in itself of things swapping and changing and him not having Eccleston and having to rewrite to try and find Hurt. And so it could be that there was a certain sort of anarchic organicness to how that was created that would that sort of almost gave its own feel to it.
Additional drafts enhancing the production.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of what the original idea would have been with Eccleston involved, it was a far more straightforward tale. As soon as you've got Hurt involved, and then you start take that back a step, and you've got this whole thing of this new Doctor involved that no one's heard of, and it starts to almost create something in itself. It creates itself as something unusual because it has to get round the politics of what was going on behind the scenes. So, to be fair, maybe it feels different, and maybe he didn't have a hand in actually putting that together. Maybe he had to fast write it at the end. I mean, to be fair, the scene doesn't actually have that much depth to it. It is very much Baker sort of being very poetic, really, and Smith listening, and then the resolution being that Gallifrey's his direction, which is where Moffat was wanting allegedly to take it for 1 year.
Yes.
I don't know. Just saying that.
But yeah. You know, it's the callback that we've been looking for, because, you know, 50th anniversary, Day of the Doctor, an adventure in space and time, David Bradley as William Hartnell, as the first Doctor, who we saw at the end of The Doctor Falls as the first Doctor. We'd had rumours of David Bradley's involvement in the Christmas episode. I am going to dare to ask the question.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mum, if you're listening. This is fan wankery of the highest order, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the problem I've got here, and someone, I'm trying to think, might have been Elton sort of said this in one of his Facebook things, being a massive William Hartnell fan, he kind of, I shouldn't say that because, you know, he might not want people to know that. Pretend it's someone called Belton who said to me, or said, you know, say he's a big William Hartnell fan, so there was, he was, you know, there was something about this which...
Shall we call him Reg? Shall we call him Reg?
Something that Reg said to me.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say it to me. It was on. It wasn't Facebook. It was Instabook. Let's give it a, I don't know, a diegetic name for a story that we're involved in. And he kind of said, yeah, that basically he was saying that, you know, William Hartnell was his doctor, and he found it uncomfortable having Bradley. And I thought, well, but surely Bradley's played it before. I thought, well, no, Bradley's played Hartnell before. He wasn't playing the first Doctor. He was playing William Hartnell. He was doing a portrayal of William Hartnell. And it's kind of thinking like, if Tom Baker is your favourite Doctor and you see a show that does the life of Tom Baker and you have a different actor playing it, and you accept that. But that's different to actually having a different actor playing the fourth Doctor on screen. And I know we can say Richard Hurdle did it for the five Doctors, but I think, to be very frank, beyond Carol Ann Ford's public PR point that she found that it was almost like exactly having William Hartnell there, I don't think anyone watched it really felt that Richard Hurdle captured William Hartnell, aside from a very similar surname. It wasn't bad. It didn't destroy it. In fact, he was quite an interesting first Doctor, but he wasn't William Hartnell to me. William Hartnell was never like that in any of his... I mean, he did a few different first Doctors, didn't he? I mean, when he was at the beginning, to when he was at the end, to when he was in the middle, they were quite different. And Richard Hurdle's was sort of like an amalgamate of all of them. On a bad day after a whiskey, which probably was like William Hartnell, I don't know, but it just didn't really... So yeah, I kind of feel that, yeah, this is fan wank of its highest order. I suppose you could argue that if you're a new series fan or a casual watcher and you get told that he's going to meet the very, very first incarnation of himself, if you knew nothing about Doctor Who, maybe that would be interesting. But
Terrence,
I don't
Dicks
know,
got,
it's just...
Yeah. Terrence Dicks got absolutely slated for the eight Doctors in 1997.
Yes.
In which the eighth Doctor bumped into all seven of his previous incarnations in order to resolve some amnesia. And the situations that they were put in. I mean, and you know, the, how they changed the canon exactly. I mean, this is exactly the same thing. We're now going to find... we don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, given the running length of the Christmas episode, is it going to take an hour for the first Doctor to make it to his TARDIS to regenerate?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm only hoping that this is in his head in the end, and then rather than actually back in the 10th planet, 1986. I don't like it, as a fan, I find it just gets a bit retentive that his life's, you know, the whole universe just becomes like a soapbox for the Doctor, the current incarnation of the Doctor, be it history, which is what we expect. He now virtually, he's met virtually everyone important in history or influenced them, and now he's back going through his own timeline, influencing himself. And it's just like, how far do you go with this?
Well, this is one of Brian's massive bugbears, isn't it? This rewriting of the canon, Brian.
Yeah, very much. I saw somebody's kind of reasoning for where Capaldi is going to end up at the Christmas special, which is basically, you know, you're going to have both the first Doctor and the 12th Doctor right at their moments of regeneration. Here's the 12th Doctor on Antarctica walking back to his TARDIS to regenerate before Ben and Polly get back there. And then the 12th Doctor is going to find him. Neither one of them are prepared for regeneration, but they're going to help each other through it kind of thing. I don't know how they're going to get to where they get to in some of the spoilery pics I saw, but it seemed like a pretty sound theory. The only thing that I also fully expect to see at Christmas time is Clara coming in, who is still the splintered version of herself, not the one with the crappy TARDIS ending that we got from Series 9, because, you know, you don't need her, although it could easily be her. It'll be the one that was splintered all throughout the Doctor's lives. She'll be there for both the first and 12th Doctor to help them through their regenerations, because why not? There's only so many ways you can fuck up a Doctor Who story. Might as well throw Clara back in there. So yeah, it's really bad. It's a shame. It was a shame because there, much like any of Moffat's stories, there's some good things in there. There's some good points, and all you had to do was make that story work for those good things, and not go over the top or too far with ideas. And unfortunately, went too far. And certainly with the Christmas story, I'm just. His track record with Christmas stories is extremely poor. And I can't imagine that it being another Doctor's final episode in his era, and then he had to throw in the first Doctor with it, that he's going to knock it out of the park. I just can't imagine that. Unless somehow, magically, he's going to have somebody else write it for him. I can't see it being done. So it's just going to screw up history.
I think what's interesting with this one is that all the problems with it stem from the focus on fandom, on the show's internal history. Every mistake it makes is to do with that. If you think of the previous episode, which I know I wasn't involved in your talk of, which I thought was possibly one of the best episodes of Doctor Who I've ever seen, was incredible. I thought it was incredible from start to finish. It had its moments of fandom, you know, with Howard Saxon coming back, or the Master, whatever you want to call him, and the Cybermen, but they're all peripheral to this really nice, well-paced, complex, emotional story. It mixed all the best things that Moffat does with the high-tech science fiction time ideas with a bit of a human heart to it, quite literally, or lack of a human heart. And Peter Capaldi was able to shine. John Sim did a fantastic performance throughout. So did, I thought, Missy was really engaging at the beginning. You know, I used to hate Missy. I thought she was brilliant in that. So it was, and this is not to sort of say this is what made this one seem bad. It's just what that one was doing, what it set up, was really strong in its own right. And then this one couldn't follow that through because it was too engaged in regenerations, in the sort of Missy Master Doctor thing, in Cybermen, in this big whole concept of it being the big finale for Capaldi, and then obviously leading to this William Hartnell thing. So it just fell to pieces because it just no longer had that focus on telling the story it was telling. In fact, it deliberately destroyed that story within the opening act with a very tenuous, he fell against the computer he needed to press a couple of keywords to change their directives, which they seemed to forget actually after they left.
Yeah.
And suddenly they were back after people. So it just didn't. It had no core to it. It had no heart. It was just another Siege story where Cybermen, again, he made the mistake he's made through every Cybermen story I've seen so far, is that they just become fodder that he does. They just become, you know, we've talked about this before. The more adversaries you create, the weaker they become. Ultimately, if you've got a finite amount of protagonists and victims, the more you create, the weaker the enemy becomes. So if you create 1,000 Cybermen, which can all be destroyed by apples and anything on that area that could be turned into a weapon, they have now lost all their power. They've lost all their energy. They've lost all their malevolence. And they didn't get to do anything to anyone. In fact, even at the beginning, they were just shot and put into scarecrow poles, which was a fairly eerie and nice idea. But there was no comeback to it. So there was just absolutely nothing there. It was just watching him. He might as well just been sort of punching trees or mannequins. They were just, it just really upsets me to see. And this is why I think, you know, when people say, you know, are fans being too aggressively antagonistic to shows which cater for them, we go, no, because it's not catering for them. Because I think as soon as they get involved in that process, okay, it gives them a nice PR, but it absolutely destroys their story. And that's why there was nothing there, because there was just too much and there was just no way to sit and focus on anything. That should have stayed in the basement. They could have still had the Bill thing, which I think was interesting and was nicely played out and nicely acted and nicely directed. You know, all that was great. But the Siege thing, there was just nothing to siege against. And there was no resolution to it, because he then pulls out the, I don't want to say the Deus Ex Machina thing, because I hate people who use that term. But it was a far too, I mean, if in that first episode, the pilot with the water, You took it with a pinch of salt that this creature had so much power, just because it was there as a backdrop to let you see Bill experience the world of Doctor Who. But then to bring it back so it can absolutely do anything. It can take her, put her on the TARDIS. It can fly the TARDIS. So even put in that it could make her back into a human if it wanted to.
Maybe we should call it the Heather X Aqua.
It does feel a bit like that. It's too powerful with no real substance to really be that powerful. It was only allowed to be powerful like that in the original story because it served a purpose to be so, to give Bill an opportunity so we could follow Bill. Now it didn't. Its purpose was solely to resolve a very messed up situation, which he couldn't get. There was no way to resolve. And that was one thing I did like. I liked the way he set up that fact that they couldn't resolve it. The further up the ship they would go, time would move faster for them, but slower for the Cybermen was fairly interesting. Though, of course, I did kind of wonder, doesn't that mean surely when the Cybermen try to get up the ship, doesn't that resolve itself? Oh, no, I suppose not, because there's a limited end, isn't there? So,
what I feel should have happened, and it would have been another one of those moments where Doctor Who borrows from the comic strips, but it wouldn't have been a bad thing. They should have just left Bill. I liked Bill a lot. I think she was the best companion of Moffat's entire 7 years, and Pearl Mackie was excellent. But I do feel they should have left Bill as a Cyberman.
Yeah.
Let her go off and travel on her own like Croton in the Doctor Who magazine strips.
I'm a little different than you. I think one of two things should happen. She should have stayed a Cyberman and actually die helping the Doctor protect everybody going up to that other floor, which, again, as James kind of pointed out, there's no resolution to that. The Doctor leaves with Bill, and now that floor is left with Nardole to try and protect themselves, and eventually they'll just be overcome. Eventually, I don't know, go in the black hole? Who knows? I think Bill should have died trying to protect the Doctor somehow, and you know, what good was her life going to be anymore? She was a Cyberman, and eventually was maybe even going to succumb to being a proper full-on Cyberman. So do a self-sacrifice thing. Or when they brought back the pilot and the pilot said, hey, guess what? You can be human again. That right there was Moffat's moment to take back what he did with Clara and have Bill say, you know what? This is too much. Please make me a human again. Please take me back to Earth. I don't want this life. And I thought I would have respected that. It would have been a cheap way to get her back to having her life, but at least it would have been a companion going, you know, there's nothing wrong with being human. I want to be a human. I want to be frail. I want to go live my meager little life of eating chips. You know, I'm okay with that. And I think that would have been a good out for her. So either dying as a Cyberman or choosing to die as a human, I think, would have been the two good options, and neither were chosen.
I don't even know why they had to sort of suggest, or even that sort of kind of got me. I mean, you could have even had when she was taken out of the Cybermen as water, and okay, maybe you have to give the Doctor life because he's put them into that position now where they've got to do something. But the whole thing of going into form or going around the universe, I just can't see why they just couldn't disappear. I mean, it's a soul thing, isn't it? I don't know. It just, again, it just felt so on the nose. And it was like the Masters. Again, I felt that as well. I can understand there's a very nice symmetry in the Masters stabbing each other in the back. That I can get. But ultimately, it led to something which was fairly unsatisfying. Well, because the rest of it
leaves it pointless, doesn't it? Because, you know, there's all this promise, well, he's going to regenerate, she's going to regenerate, and really no one regenerates. In fact, he doesn't regenerate, and she doesn't regenerate. No one regenerates at all.
There's no regeneration.
The Sim Master, he's still alive. He got a dagger between the ribs. He's a flaming Time Lord with two hearts. That's not going to kill him.
Right.
He's been through worse than that. Numasmatron, for start off. That's not going to kill him. She's, like, chuckling away at herself as if she's got some sort of clever secret, and she doesn't regenerate either. He says she can't, but, what you know, she's only stabbed him a little bit for a Time Lord, you know. And so, you know, that whole thing is just wasted, and which is such a shame, because Johnson, you know, he was still magnificent as the Master.
I still don't, but that's what gets me.
Oh, he was incredible there, yeah.
Why did they need to do that? I mean, they could stab him, and to be fair, they could still do this, and he could still come back.
Yeah.
They could have had him head to his TARDIS and say, sod you, Missy. She could have gone back, which I think would have actually been more interesting as a viewer to watch her actually try and stand by the Doctor, even if she pegs it at the end, or she dies in the process. I think as a viewer, that is a more interesting, engaging story than the stab them in the back, which sounds like a clever, smart idea of saying, well, this is how the Masters would actually end. But we know it's never going to end because they're going to be back eventually under some other tenure. So knowing that, this becomes utterly pointless. And again, like you say, there's no reason. Why the hell do we always have to have one concurrent Master? Why couldn't John Sim come back and then Missy or another one? Why do we have to have this constant need to have one singular? Why dot all the I's and cross the T's? It just seems so futile and unnecessary.
Here's my take on it, because I personally feel that any good writer can go ahead and bring John Sim back and say, hey, guess what? That stab wasn't anything major. Yeah. I'm good. Didn't regenerate yet. When it comes to Missy, and I do think they should do that, because John Sim is freaking phenomenal in this story, as was Missy, Michelle Gomez. I thought they were both great. And I think that's what a lot of, in Moff's era, a lot of the good things come down to actors' performances versus the writing. Like, the writing is and the story is unfortunately not there, but the actors are stand out in many cases. Certainly in John Sim, Michelle Gomez, and Peter Capaldi, it's dead on true. But I think John Sim could easily come back, and I would love to see him come back because he's phenomenal. I loved his look. I loved his action. John Sim to me is a true actor. Like, he's not one of those, I play one character, that's it. This man, I feel, can do anything. He's so damn talented. And that's credit to him I have to give. Because anything I've seen of him, I've enjoyed it. But I, with Missy, I should say, choosing to go back to the Doctor, I, unlike you, feel that it was good that she got shot down by the Master, because what I like about that aspect is we know the Master is never truly dead. The Master will be back in somebody else's era, even if it's not Chibnall's era. We know the Master will be out there. And if Missy went to go help the Doctor, then the Doctor would know that at some point, I can save the Master. I can get my friend back, because here has already been a turning point for them. Whereas here, we saw that she was going to head for that turning point and then got stopped beforehand. So the next time the Doctor and her meet, the Doctor will never know that. He'll just think that he failed, and he'll treat the Master, he'll keep them at arm's length. And I kind of like that aspect. I like the fact that the Master, because you know the Master's not going to sit there and go, oh, but I was coming back to you. I was going to try and help you. It's not going to be that way. The Master's just going to be upset things didn't work out and the Doctor doesn't believe that they ever could. So I'm a little different than you. Like, I agree it was kind of a wasted moment, but I kind of like the fact that she didn't get to actually have the turning point. She didn't get to become the good guy.
But the problem is with that, to some degree, and this is what someone said, I've seen two arguments on this. One argument said they liked the fact that there was all these sort of things which, like, the Doctor doesn't know what happened to Bill, the Doctor doesn't know what happened to Nardole, the Doctor doesn't know what happens to the Master. So there's like slightly this nihilistic sort of end to his era where he doesn't know what happened at all, really. And I've seen another argument sort of saying, well, what was the bloody point of the Masters in this? Because they really had no... I mean, apart from the fact that obviously Sim's character actually catalyzes these Cybermen, but the Missy's character, I suppose you could argue that she comes to a decision by the end of this season, but is unable to act on it. But again, it just feels like there was just no, for the audience, there was no payoff. Yeah. It felt like following this, and I get your point, but I suppose you could also argue, does that just not mean that you get a very easy reset button for the next person, the Master, back to being evil, because you don't have to deal with the repercussions set up here.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I like it. I personally liked it for the Master, as I said, but I don't like the fact that the Doctor doesn't know what happened to Bill or Nardole. And I feel that if you get to the Christmas special and he's like, oh, here's my younger self. Well, look, I don't want to regenerate. You can't change my mind. And then he doesn't wonder what happened to Bill or Nardole, because to me, for the Doctor, this story is incomplete. He doesn't know if he's won or not. He doesn't know if his friends are safe or not. Why would he just leave them? That's so awful. So I don't like, from the Doctor's perspective, that he doesn't know what's going on. It I get how it could work for Clara at the end of series 9, because he was made to forget. He kind of knows there was a resolution, but he was made to forget who she was or what her face was. But here, it doesn't make any sense. He knows that Bill is still out there. He knows that Nardole is still out there. He knows that ship is still in danger. And here he is just lying on the TARDIS floor, you know, waking up, going out, saying, I don't want to regenerate. Oh, look, it's me. That's not a good enough reason to forget that your friends are in danger.
But there's another aspect here which irritates me, which I'm not sure whether they're going to cover. We'll see. But again, you have this whole reset up of the Mondasian Cybermen, which again, some people have argued was a pointless approach to go back there and deal with that. Fine, fair enough. I enjoyed it last week. I get that point. You know, they've undone, to some degree, people have argued, or they've argued against, they've undone spare parts, whatever you want to see on that. But the point is, it doesn't go anywhere. And that really frustrates me, especially when it becomes the Master who sort of kind of created these Mondasian Cybermen. Now you could argue that he creates them basically starting their blueprint off from what he already knows through his ability to see the history as it is. But ultimately you get these Mondasian Cybermen, which are created on this ship for a really good reason, which is a really interesting reason, not just to survive, but to even get to the top of the ship, to even to actually change their situation. You need something which can last a bloody long time and be able to survive a lot of troubles getting to the top. So that sort of really worked. And then that maybe sort of going to Mondas and then sort of converting and creating Mondas, which gets, you know, you've got some interesting stuff there. And even if you take that sort of fan history away or the show history away, the actual concept just doesn't get anything. So you have these creatures made of the people at the bottom of the ship who start making their way up. And then we get so focused on this self-importance of the Doctor and his regeneration and the Master. And to be frank, and Bill, I suppose, as well, the whole plight and the issue of the actual environment they're in is utterly forgotten. It becomes so pointless, as you say. It becomes a couple of sentences in Nardole's last appearance. Well, we'll deal with them when they come up here. Really? That's it? That was what was engaging last week.
What they could have done, it might have made it a bit darker, but maybe probably not much more darker. Or they could have done a single shot of the spacecraft, you know, disappearing into a single line and going into the black hole and revealing that actually it was too late to get them out of the black hole.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could have even had Sim go down to his TARDIS, fit his little stabilizer in, he could still have been wounded, and that could start destroying the ship. And yeah, that's a dark ending. But, you know, you've got to have something that, rather than just leaving in the middle of this engagement and then heading off. And the only reason you do it is because you're so focused on the fact it's the end of a series and then end of a tenure, which is essentially what happened here. The fact that it's Capaldi's end, Moffat's end, Missy's end, has become too much for focus here, Bill's end, that the wonderful story that they sort of pulled together last week is just totally forgotten, because it's far more important to sort of look and deal with these things, and they're not even dealt with very well. And that's the sad thing.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and that's series 8 all over again, because I remembered liking part 1 to the series finale, series 8, and then part 2 dropped the ball utterly. And it's what happened here. Like, there's too many good ideas contained within the episode that did not link together or go anywhere. which I can't say for Series 8, of course, but Series 9 certainly, or excuse me, Series 10 here had, I thought, good ideas, good potential. And
I think if you're also going to borrow or appropriate the original Cybermen, you need to do them justice as well. You didn't need the other Cybermen in this. That, again, is just a fandom thing. Focus on what they are. Focus on what makes them scary. And then, I should have just kept it in the cityscape. And given them... It's just so frustrating.
No, you're fine. My thing is, too, like, you know, we heard that, or whatever the rumors were going to be, that Moff was finally going to explain how all the different Cybermen were connected. You know, Russell T. Davis, the Moff era, and the originals. And instead, we get a spaceship full of Mondasians, and I don't see how it at all relates. You know, like, we know that there was already a second planet, a twin planet, you know, and it just doesn't... It doesn't relate. So what does the ship eventually break free of the black hole? Does Nardole lose and all those Cybermen go back to Mundas and say, hey, guys, we got a way to save you all? Like, is that what we're meant to believe? Like, and then it does contradict spare parts. But then even as James, as I saw one of your comments posting the other day, they already have now referenced a comic book as well as referencing the Big Finish plays trying to say that all these things are real. So what are we meant to believe? Is this spaceship just Mundasian?
Isn't there a line in there saying how it's a kind of an inevitability across the universe that cyber forms will...
No, there is that, and that's fine. And I like that because that goes back to David Banks' book in the 80s, that Cybermen are not one continuous thing, that they perhaps come from different tribes of Cybermen, per se. That's fine, but I think what Brian is sort of saying, that the actual issue of the Mondasian Cybermen just doesn't carry any flow. Yeah, it doesn't explain them. It just contradicts what we've had before in a media form, which is now being sort of given a closer relevance to the series, not just with the references in Night of the Doctor, was it? Yeah, but also in the within the Big Finish series. Now they're allowed to use Tennant and Unit, and there's a far more tightening of those bands, and yet you kind of think, well, spare parts being their magnus opus of their whole range to some degree, you've not just contradicted them to some degree, but you've not even finished your story, which I think is what's really insulting. Is if you could contradict it and created your own timeline of events around the Mondasian Cybermen that went against spare parts, I'm sure you'd probably have to go, okay, fine. And Big Finish would go, that's writing for you. You know, you've got to write interesting stories. We get that. It's only fiction. But when you don't even actually finish your story because you get too wound up in sort of this big end showcase. And the sad thing is, and I still think this is the saddest thing, is that if he wanted a good end to his era, he needed to forget about the regeneration. He needed to forget about trying to shock people. Maybe, you know, the John Sim Missy thing was a track that was in the wrong direction, even though I enjoyed it for what it was there. Maybe if he'd just written this story that was the Doctor, the Mondasian Cybermen, the issues with Bill on this ship, resolved it, he's got the Christmas special to do the regeneration. He's got the Christmas special where he could bring back the Master and Missy. Again, it just seems to be the mistake that happens so many times. And we've seen it, obviously, in film where it's obvious, where, you know, the sequel has got to have twice the baddies. The sequel to the sequel's got to have, you know, twice again. You overload something, it falls apart. And that first episode last week, even though we have the master reveal of Sim at the end, you can take that out and it's a brilliant episode. You know, the Mr. Razor is wonderful. He's a great character. He's very humorous. Reminds me of Zathras from Babylon 5. You know, it's a really great story without the reveal. So I think what's just so frustrating is that the legacy, and I think this is where people say that the fan stuff is getting in the way. It's not that they're sort of saying that people don't understand the show because there's too much fan stuff in. There is a bit of an argument to that, but like last week, you didn't need to know the Mondasian Cybermen were from the 10th planet to understand that they were a Cyberman from a place called Mondas. But when the actual elements of the show start inhibiting the show from telling a story which has got some sort of structure to it, that's where I think the problem is. And that's what we got this week again, as he does in every finale.
Let's hit the comments, okay, on Facebook. It's quite a mix. We've got Phil Vernon, who says he's seen plenty of negativity about the episode this morning, but enjoyed it. Nardole's ending was fitting and Bill's ending was kind of sweet. You've got Andrew Brooke, practically flawless, even though Heather and Bill is essentially a retread of the end of last series. This time it worked. Gary Akers, all-round great episode. Capaldi was staggering and heartbreaking. Nick Caulfield couldn't stop a tear or two rolling down his face. Paul G, plenty of recycled elements from previous Moth work. Again, Sidemen lost any menace they recaptured in the previous episode and should have been resolved early in the episode. Why every generation of Sidemen has been upgraded by Tony Stark to fly is beyond me. Jonathan Roberts really enjoyed it. Daniel Edwards really enjoyed it overall. Katie Poole enjoyed most of it, but Bill's resolution is far too similar to Clara's for her liking. Rich Gulchy thought the Master left things nicely open. Nigel Webb, as close to perfection as you can get. I so hope you liked it, guys. Please don't fret about Bill not dying. I know it's Moffat's weakness at not letting people die, but let him off this one time. I suspect Nigel is speaking directly to us there. I'm going to just throw some positives out there.
Wait, before you do.
What?
Because I see that Nigel's next comment was, I was crying silently through a lot of this episode. Once the episode had aired, I took to Facebook, and one of the things was, did this episode make you cry? I said no.
Okay.
I just wanted to put that out there. Nothing did. There was nothing tear-jerking about the episode.
There was something tear-jerking about the episode.
That we watched it?
No. You cheeky, you racist, dice to you. No. The regeneration, the beginning, because regenerations always make me cry. And I honestly thought we were going to get regeneration and then something was going to happen to stop it. So when we start seeing the clips of everyone saying doctor, that's when I started getting wobbly.
Oh, I didn't.
No,
it didn't
work.
This has been done before.
I always said, done before. Exactly. I said, oh, look, now he's stealing Tom Baker's regeneration.
I was just thinking, oh my God, he's now utterly aware of what the Radio Times will do within 30 minutes of the airing, which is the trivia list of things you might have missed in this episode.
And the past references to the other regenerations.
Exactly.
And all
you
that
kind of
stuff.
Feel yeah, that's yeah. where it's sort of all going. Where
oh
do we
man, those things you missed about this episode articles, every one of yes. which we sit there and go, really, you feel we missed that? Like, how stupid do you think we are?
So thank you, everyone on Facebook, for your comments. They are appreciated. Obviously, we don't agree with most of you on this one, other than, I think, probably Paul G. But there are some positives. I mean, we've talked about Sim. We've talked about Gomez. It's a superb production in terms of, the direction and the quality, the performance of the various Cybermen set pieces. They're all very well executed and well produced, filmed. The soundtrack was good. We haven't really talked about Peter Capaldi, though.
Yeah, well, okay, wait. If we're going to start getting with the positives,
yeah,
I feel I got to talk about two negatives.
Okay.
Before we go on, two pointlesses, I guess I'll say. Two pointless things. Let's do that. Number one was when Nardole finds that shuttlecraft, and he says, I found this in the decks below. And then he goes, shuttlecraft. As if the entire audience didn't know what that was. Because that's what we needed. You know, thank you, Nardole. My God, I don't understand Moffat's writing so much. I needed you to tell me what that was. As a matter of fact, I really wish that every character came on and said, Master, all right, now you know who I am. Let's go. Like, shuttlecraft, that was needed. The other pointless thing was Bill going to the doctor. So, you know that I like women, right? And usually people of my own age. And the doctor says, yeah. And then she goes, okay, good, and runs away. Like, that needed to be reiterated for that episode just one last time because people will have forgotten that throughout the last 12 episodes.
I thought that was just all to do with down the fact that she kind of the subtext for me was that she appreciated that he just accepted her as she was. And
no, I didn't get that. I got it as a pointless reminder to the audience so that when she meets Pilot again at the end, people aren't like, oh, she's gay. You know, no, it was just like. It seemed like there should have been something else in there. I thought it was going to be.
I've got a whole tub of Who Cares ice cream in my freezer, and I'm going to deal it out to everyone now with an added dash of couldn't give a chocolate sauce.
I thought they were going to make them have a moment, basically, where she was like, you know, this is my preference. This is how I am. This is who I am, right? And he's like, yeah. And then she would say something like, but you're all right. You know, it doesn't mean that she's hot for him. Doesn't mean she wants to have sex with him. It means she's paying him a compliment. I thought that was where they were going to go, but instead it went nowhere. It just told us information we knew.
They could have easily just said, but you are awesome, Doctor.
Yeah, something.
And I've met all these, I've done all these crazy things all thanks to you. Yeah. Okay, so.
That's exactly.
Peter Capaldi. One of the,
okay, yeah, go. Do your bit.
Colin McLean, what is it?
I was just going to say, the one thing that did get me was the, and this seems to be something that seems to be very much connected to Capaldi's era, is that the bits that were obviously shot for the Christmas special, his hair was so much longer than the interior TARDIS shots.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it you know, goes back to the Series 8 with the flatline where his hair changes like 2 to 3 times.
Have you never been out in the cold and suddenly found your hair going, whoa, I need to warm you up?
Yes.
Clearly not. Peter Capaldi's performance in this part of the Doctor. I mean, he was great last week in the superior first part. I think we've all agreed that Peter Capaldi's been the one consistently great thing, even when he hasn't been consistently great through the writing, throughout his own era of Doctor Who. I'm not sure if... Have I? Anyway, I'll just carry on. And he was fantastic last in The Doctor Falls. But, you know, I mean, he spent quite a bit of it unconscious, let's be honest.
Mm.
So, you know, you've got this conversation with Bill, the Cyber Bill, in the barn. You've got the speech, in quotes, with the Master. And that moment when the Master says that he hasn't been listening.
Well, I don't blame him, because I kind of felt the speech just felt... I think this goes back to Brian's original point about this being sort of like 8 and 9. Mm. But I'd also argue it's almost like Series 7 as well.
It's also the Time of the Doctor.
It's Trenzalore again,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
What I was going to say. Yeah, it's Trenzalore again. Yeah.
And so, again, it kind of felt like we'd been here before, and the speech, while beautifully done by Capaldi, the speech just felt a bit left field and a bit over-emotional and a bit out of place, and I don't know, it just felt whiny.
He knows he's dying though, doesn't he?
But again, that was another thing I didn't like about the episode. I felt that, you know, the moment of regeneration should be something that's particularly poignant and powerful. There should be a sort of moment where, you know, a bit like the Hulk, where it crosses a line. Here it wasn't. He sort of gets electrified early, which sort of starts his regeneration. He gets a fist worth of regeneration a little early. So he's obviously on the road. And then obviously gets shot a few times in this terribly poor, I don't know, this battle, which just is lacks, to me, it just lacked drama. It just, I don't know. It just felt like the wrong character. It didn't feel like the Doctor running around shooting people with a sonic screwdriver. Good Lord. And I don't know, it just didn't seem to be able to focus down onto where the emotional crux of the episode is. I just kind of feel like, you know, if you're an editor to a book, you'd be sort of saying, where is the core of the emotion here? Where do you want it? Because you clearly want it, you've clearly got the opportunity, but you don't seem to know where you want to put it. So it doesn't seem to have a place. And so, yeah, I didn't feel any sort of sadness there, because he wasn't really in a position. If he was starting to regenerate by then, it wasn't clear, especially because later on he gets hit again. And that seems to be the regeneration point, when he sort of goes into his battle. And it's like, you know, you've got to pick a point. Otherwise, it doesn't carry strength. You know, a lightsaber battle in Empire Strikes Back, to me, is far more potent than 1,000 lightsaber battles in Revenge of the Sith, because it becomes the singular point. It becomes the point which you focus on and you read and you see. Instead of the ones where you get so many, it sort of loses its energy. That's how I felt with it. It's like, you know, choose your point, which was what was good in, you know, End of Time, where, okay, you have him fall through the roof and you think, oh, is this going to be the point where he's going to have to regenerate? But there's no hint that that is it. He's okay. Okay, a lot of people found that ridiculous. But the point where the point of where he is killed is very clear. It's very evident. You know, his crucifix, his guillotine, whatever you want to call it, is labeled very clearly. It's that booth. It's that radiation booth, and that's what he has to face. Here, it doesn't seem to know where he has to face the thing that he has to face. And so the speech just feels whiny, when I felt Capaldi's last speech should have been more sort of powerful. It should have been more angry. It's Capaldi here. This is Capaldi's Doctor. He should have been turning to those two and saying, look, you know, what does it take for you two to work this out here? And done the same sort of logic as he does in the speech. But to me, it shouldn't have been about sort of pleading to them, which is exactly what he shouldn't be doing, which they keep making him do with Missy and the Master. You know, it's always been this sort of trying to sort of talk to her. It should have been, he's Capaldi. He's a strong, powerful, aggressive Scots actor with, you know, energy. He should have been there. He should have been there dwarfing them with energy there. Sort of, you know, he should have been there sort of berating them for their fear, their cowardly running away, saying, you know, you are the most amazing people, but to me, you know, you are, I'm not going to say you are pathetic, but, you know, you are, this is, you know, who I am, and I, this is who you should be. Do you know what I mean? There should have been that sort of Capaldi aggression and anger, not this pleading. He's not an old man to plead. He's meant to be the most angry, agitated doctor that we've had in some respects, and yet he never is in these sort of moments. And that, again, so for me, there was no tears. It was well directed, it was well performed, but it just felt wrong.
Okay. Well, that is a good time to look back on the rest of the series, because, you know, we're going to have to do the Moffat era at a look back after Christmas. So, you know, we're going to, there's no point doing it now, because then, it, you know, it hasn't finished yet. So it would be pointless, wouldn't it? So we've had...
Oh, I think it's finished.
Well, it hasn't until Christmas, has it?
No, but I think it's finished. I don't mean that it's over. I mean it's finished. It's, there's nothing good for it. It can't be saved by one episode.
Okay.
Well, I'd be worried. So what, do we know anything about the Christmas episode beyond the fact of Regenerations and Bradley?
David Bradley's in it, and it's being written by Moffat, which means its chances...
It's going
don't
out.
Stand very high. It's because of David Bradley.
It's hitting cameras across South Wales as we speak, as it were.
You know, just, here's, yeah, here's
do you know
something.
I've just said something that no one in the history of English language has ever said before. It's hitting cameras across South Wales as we speak.
Mm.
No one's put those words together before, which puts me in mind of a Fry and Laurie sketch, which I'm not going to go into right now.
I wonder, though, how many fans has anybody seen on the internet complaining how long it's taking for the 12th Doctor to regenerate versus how many fans threw out a backlash when the 10th Doctor decided to go say bye to his companions one last time? You know, where are they now? Where are those fans now?
You see, I was talking to my niece last week, my eldest niece, who is 13. She's 13 a few weeks ago. And she was introduced to Doctor Who by me, along with her sister, during the David Tennant era. And probably about 2007-08. And they watched all the way through until 2014. When they decided they didn't like the new Doctor because he was too old and grumpy. Which he was in 2014. He was very grumpy.
He was, yeah.
And, you know, these are the school-age children who should be watching Doctor who, you know, we've learned are not the target audience for the current incarnation of Doctor Who. So I suspect the majority of people doing the complaining last time round, their modern forebears are not watching.
Mm.
Which is a terrible, terrible shame. I mean, I haven't... Another thing about this season, and I think we've... I think we've appreciated this year's run of Doctor Who a bit better than we did the 2015 run.
Yes.
From memory. I think we've enjoyed it a lot more. But
definitely.
One of the things that I found to be a problem is that there's very little of it that I feel comfortable showing to my little boy. And, you know, he's 2 years older now.
Well, do you think the casting of Capaldi, in a sense, was very indicative of that? Because Capaldi is a name that will be for sort of like 15-year-olds upwards would have been aware of. It wasn't a name that really, and that would have been, and for those two people, you'd be thinking, yeah, Capaldi, you know, Malcolm fucking Tucker, you know, this is going to be great. But the age groups where it should have been sort of inspiring as well, do you see what I mean? He was cast almost like a name that was known by a specific age group, which is a specific age group that the show is aimed at the moment, rather than the... It does. I'm agreeing with you rather than disagreeing. Just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll come back to that in a moment. But, you know, like, you know, 2 years ago, my little boy was 4. He's just turned 6. 2 years ago, we're watching, you know, Flatline and Mummy on the Orient Express and all that sort of thing. This year, there's probably one, maybe two episodes that I feel comfortable with him watching that aren't too dark, that don't have big scares in them, that don't seem too mature for him to think about properly. And you know, I absolutely do not want to kind of prejudge my son, or you know, the ability of children to actually understand in the face of adults sort of thinking for them. But there's various, you know, the time slot the Doctor he's been on says, you know, this is older stuff until the, like, you know, the back end of the season. And, you know, who they're writing for and who they've been talking to. You go back to the Tom Baker era, and, you know, Terrence Dix always said that you should be writing for an intelligent 9-year-old or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, the last couple of years of the Tom Baker era, or certainly when Douglas Adams is involved, you've got a show that is very much talking to undergraduates.
Yeah.
And we're kind of back in that area.
I think there's a problem that children's television still has this odd thing where it carries a certain amount of value to actors, or to talent, in the sense that they often have children who'll encourage them to go and do it. So it has that sort of value, but it just seemed to carry a certain lack of value still. It seems to be a certain snobbishness that the show, because you shouldn't be, I mean, you see it in the people talking about it, how angry people say if you say it's written for children or children involved. They'll go, no, it's not. It's a show for adults, or it's a show for the family, which is a great way of sort of saying, trying to limit the fact that children are a very key element to the show. And that's sort of really a shame. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I still enjoy watching was actually made for children, which I'm not saying Doctor Who should be like that, but I think, quite frankly, you'd be hard pushed. I mean, you think of Carnival of Monsters. Let's face it, that's not really aimed at a 24-year-old, 30-year-old adult. You know, even Frontier in Space, not aimed at a 24 to 30-year-old adult. It's a very key, you know, the politics, the levels of complexity are very simple there, that a child could get it. An adult can enjoy it, especially with the script and the charm. But you've got to have it there for the kids as well. I don't know. It's
Well, let's hit the viewing figures, because we're at the end of the series, so now's a good time to look at it again. According to Doctor Who News' summary, The Doctor Falls was watched by 3.75 million viewers, which is paltry compared to previous seasons, but it's 25% of the available TV audience, which is sizable. Good weather in the UK. Look at this, okay? Pointless Celebrities was on just before Doctor Who. Now, although it had Gary Lineker on it, that would have seriously impacted how many people wanted to watch it. There was still 3.26 million turned up for that. Casualty, the BBC's big Saturday night drama for 30 years, I think, this year.
Yeah.
4.05 million people watched that. There is no Saturday night audience anymore. It's gone, virtually. You know, that thing that Julie Graham and Russell T. Davis and Jane Tranter worked immensely hard 12 years ago to resurrect. It's gone. And it's obliterated, and it's happened during Stephen Moffat's time as Doctor Who executive.
I mean, I think in fairness,
I'm not blaming purely Stephen Moffat.
No, because I mean, we can also say
a distinct lack of focus from BBC One.
But there's also been a distinct lack of focus in trying to set up dramas that fill that slot. I mean, Merlins, the Robin Hoods, even on the other channels, the Primevals, that Saturday night drama for television seems to have dissipated in itself. And yeah,
ITV have gone back to quiz shows, and You've Been Framed, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where and they movies. See Saturday night. That is where the Saturday night generic output is for commissioners, from what I've been told, is about that sort of entertainment, and maybe a little later on factual entertainment, but drama just isn't really there at the moment.
Yeah.
And
I think you're right about the BBC as well. They have abandoned the idea of having a show to replace Doctor Who when Doctor Who's not on air.
Merlin, well, Atlantis was...
they did a good job with Merlin, didn't they? But I think Atlantis is where they've failed.
Yeah, I think that
it?
Stung them really badly, and they've just sort of backed off.
I wonder how they would have fared with Musketeers as the slightly earlier show on a Saturday, if they'd have repitched it slightly. I think
The third season was definitely far less dark than the first. Mm-hmm. So it felt like there was a slight repitching. But again, like with Ripper Street, there seemed to be a lack of real energy in the promotions of that show. Doctor Who gets far more than that they did, because it will get covers. The Radio Times will cover it in ridiculous.
It's got its own magazine.
Yeah, so the Doctor Who does get far more coverage, but it's a hard one because, I mean, there is this whole thing that commissioning factual is cheaper, so and it's quicker as well. That's the other problem, is to actually create a fact create a factual show, whether it's an entertainment factual one or whether it's a documentary, is often cheaper and far quicker than it is to create a drama. So you can see why, if people aren't tucking into dramas, while commissioners will move towards, not commissioners, but television will move towards non-scripted entertainment. So it makes sense. So it's a difficult one. And Doctor Who really, I think it's interesting. I think you're right, though. I think what you've said is quite interesting in the sense that you did have Gardner, Tranter and Davis. They did re-energize that slot in a way that you saw Primeval. You saw non-scripted suddenly getting a little scared, and they were sort of trying to shift around their blocks to either challenge or not challenge Doctor Who, depending on the our timeline of events. So you can make drama that powerful force. But I think, as you say, you've got to manage to make it all-encompassing, so it carries a wide, broad demographic to bring in those people and to bring in the families. I think that's probably the key thing, isn't it? As you said, it's bringing in the families. Because the one thing television has, which VOD and the other things don't have really at the moment, is it's still considered a place where families will do an event, essentially. They're sitting down, eating their dinner, and they will watch television as an event. It's something that they will eat with their dinner.
Yeah, that's what, Saturday night, that's what families want to do. They want to stick something on that's entertaining and order a pizza.
But I think they quite like the scheduling as well. I think, I'm not sure people really talk about this enough, but I think it's quite an interesting thing, is that scheduling carries a certain amount of value because it comes on at a certain time. And yeah, we can now rewind on our players to rewatch what we miss, or we can catch up later. But ultimately, something about something scheduled means that you make dinner in time to sit down together with anticipation of watching a television show. Does that event feel like a cinema thing? And we still have that. So linear television still has that power. And So Doctor Who can fulfill that if it's touching the whole bloody family. If the whole family wants to see it, wants to see a drama like Doctor Who, that will give the ratings that Casualty gets. But I just think it is too fragmented at the moment. And like we've said before, next year I think it's going to be interesting. All these different things, the writer's room format is interesting. I don't get the impression from what I've heard that the writer's room is going to carry any of the big names of the writers prior. Looks like it might be something quite specific to Chibnall's teams. Which could be interesting.
Could be, yeah,
sure. Because we've got writers which have been writing this now since 2005. What's that going to be like? You take them out and you get a totally new perspective. Maybe that'll be good for it. This, the more slightly serialized, we've said this before. These might just make changes or bring people into it. It may not, but at least there's going to be some changes. But yeah, you're right. Something's got to be done. And I just kind of hope they're looking at this and just thinking, we're going out for all these tricks of the trade. This last two episodes, we've had Cybermen to promote, Dalek Masters to promote, we've had Regenerations to promote, and we're still sitting, 3.75 million, 25% of the audience share. That's really good. But there are other shows which are, what was the percentage audience share for Casualty? Do we know that?
No, I haven't got that. But it would be lower, won't it? Because it's 4 million, it's later on in the day.
That's what I mean. So it's got to be careful how we sort of compare the two. But 25% still isn't bad, but I just kind of feel, just logically, if the show is made to sort of encompass a wider demographic, it's going to get a better audience share.
Yeah,
because the fans are going to keep watching it.
The opposite show on ITV was Quantum of Solace.
Seriously, that's interesting.
Which got this was on opposite Casualty, that got two and a quarter million, I think. I was watching Quantum of Solace.
What's working against Doctor Who these days?
That would have been pretty much nothing, really. Catchphrase. Little big shots, a couple of shorter programmes, which are probably ITV News, and then Catchphrase.
That's interesting. I'd love to know the logics behind that, because obviously they're very aware of each other's schedules. I'd love to know what that says, whether it's something where they don't want to put something to challenge Doctor Who, because, as you say, the audience share is high, or is it because they don't feel that they need to worry, or that it lacks that? I don't know.
Doctor Who, you've got the Battle of the Battle of the Talent Contest. You've got Pitch Battle on BBC versus The Voice Kids on ITV.
It's a world, weird world, but I think the problem is that I like scripted television, and I've long loved Doctor Who, and I think I've got to be careful here, because I didn't hate it. I think it was a mess, and I think as a mess, the mess told you a lot of things about how it should have been and how it wasn't. But I mean, I watched it and I wasn't bored, and I enjoyed the performances. I think, cause it was interesting to see how, you know, John Sim would work against, you know, Gomez and the Doctor. You know, the Bill thing was interesting. So it wasn't like it was awful television to watch. But I just, and I don't think it's just because, like I said, that last week was so good. I just feel that, you know, the topic we have here that we're talking about is how much does the history of the show get in the way of telling a good story, which is, I think, the ultimate issue for Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
And it becomes the same issue for all of them, doesn't it? Star Trek and all Star Wars and all that sort of stuff.
So, winding back a couple of moments before we take on the last topic and wrap up, this series of Doctor Who,
yeah,
we're at the end of it now. What's really been the standout of the past 12 episodes?
Oh, the last episode, the penultimate episode for me.
Penultimate episode, right. Brian?
I can't say I would argue that. I know there was another one in there that was enjoyable, but I can't think of it. So it's kind of like I'm kind of stuck in a moment of what is the standout moment. But I would have to say that episode, but more specifically, Peter Capaldi, John Sim, Michelle Gomez. And, you know, I'm going to say Pearl Mackey, because she had moments. I liked her. She's the first companion of Moff's era that I truly liked.
Yeah.
That isn't to say, like, I liked Amy and Rory. They were okay. They weren't my favorite. Clara easily, quickly went downhill, but I actually really liked Bill the whole time. I liked how real she was until the very end, when they went ahead and made her superhuman, like they did with everybody else in that era. But yeah, I would say those mainly would be my standout moments.
I liked the setup as well. I liked the university situation. Mm-hmm. I liked, even though I thought Nadal often lost his direction, I liked the idea of having Nadal there, and I think he could have been used better. But that was,
and you know what? With that, I want to say I was harsh on him in the beginning, and I even said, unless Moffat pulls a Donna and makes me like him. But I have to agree, there were moments where I was like, okay, I can see why this character works. And then there were moments where I was like, why is this character here? But I have to agree, he did have moments.
Yeah, overall, I think he probably just tips in the way of a success. I would say probably, I'm not going to go for an episode. I'm just going to say the central pairing of the Doctor and Bill. I think that's what has carried this series along. I think Pearl Mackey has been absolutely excellent. Peter Capaldi has had his own companion, basically, which he didn't have previously. He had 11 leftovers, didn't he? So whether it be Clara or River. So to have him have his own companion, I think it did Peter Capaldi a lot of good. I think it did the show a lot of good. Pearl Mackey's excellent. I hope she has a wonderful career ahead of her, because based on that, she absolutely must do.
I mean, I hope, again, the team coming up will look and see some of the mistakes in it. I mean, again, we go back to the topic of fan or fan history or the show history. Missy being in the vault just wasn't strong enough, and nor was the reasoning behind Missy being in the vault, nor did I come out of that series as an intelligent person really understanding what that was all about, in the sense that it seemed like, was he going to leave her in there for 1,000 years, and then what was he then, if she turned good before 1,000 years, did she come out? Nadal seemed to think that couldn't happen. There was a code here which he'd already broken that he had to adhere to. That didn't make sense. The TARDIS jumping from Mars, I thought would be explained in some way. Never was. It was just the TARDIS. That seemed weird.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things which just make the series, and obviously, as we've just said, the whole Mondasian ship feels incomplete. I'm just hoping that they go into the next series and start thinking we need to wrap things up more. And I think one of the things which I'm hoping that they will sort of see in this, and I was saying this in, on as you say, the Book of Face, that you need to, they need to make things more standalone, in the sense that one of the biggest issues I've found with Doctor Who is things like, we go back to Series 9, where you have Fear the Raven, which is a good episode, and then you have the Heaven Hellbent, which then actually undoes every bit of the points that the writer's making in Fear the Raven. And why do you do that? And that's just the thing that you kind of fear, that each, that when you follow on an episode referring to a previous one, you just end up undoing some of the strength that have come before it. And I'm kind of hoping they will stop, that the next season will be less of that.
I don't want to come across as, hey, I'm a writer, I'm better than you. However, there is a oft-repeated, well-known phrase when writing fiction, and that is kill your darlings. In fact, it's not really to do with fiction, it's to do with writing in general. If there's something that's your favourite,
absolutely,
then you cut it out and make it tighter.
PJ Harvey used to say that with music. If there's a bit that she really, really liked, often she would pull it out because it would just get in the way of the rest of the song.
Sure. And, you know, Stephen Moffat didn't create the Doctor, he creates the Companions, and he's had the opportunity four times to kill his Companions, and, you know, Riversong dies in a particular way, but the lead up to it apparently takes 50 years. Amy dies through old age after being sent back in time by a Weeping Angel. Clara dies, but just before she dies, her essence is taken away, or she's taken away in a second of time, and then gets to live the rest of her life. And Bill gets mortally wounded, upgraded into a Cyberman, and then she goes and travels through space and time with a puddle,
which is so amazing.
These are all opportunities to do something that hasn't been done.
But that's what gets me. Why did he do that? I mean, this was his swan song. This was the moment where he could do something now, which would stamp his mark and then walk away feeling he had done something. Why did he do that? I mean, again, we don't know. Maybe there are powers from above. Maybe there's requests, politics, maybe Chibnall, you know, someone sort of said, could you leave it open? I might want to use her again. But even then, why dot the I's and cross the T's? Why make it so explicit, you know, that how she could come back? Why? I don't know. I kind of think it would have been more satisfying, and maybe this is because I've been watching Twin Peaks, if you'd had her sort of inner self when the Cyberman falls over and you see the water girl and the smile, and then we just see the Doctor back in the TARDIS. And, you know, you let the audience try and extrapolate what's happened there, and you don't see her again. That would be a far more powerful ending for Bill, because the audience could decide what happened. You'd get lots of talk on all the message boards, and the Radio Times could write its long pieces of what happened there with Bill. Well, you know, that to me, as you say, it's not about trying to tell writers what to do. I mean, like I said, last week was an incredible bit of writing. You know, the dialogue was rich. The characters were there. Missy was deployed well. There was chemistry. There was really smart ideas. So it's not about saying this person can't write. He's a fantastic writer when he gets down to, you know, when he gets his teeth into something. But again, it's this topic, isn't it? It's this question of when does the show's legacy started in a damaging the ability to write, which again you can see straight away why Russell T. Davis put in that time war. And you can see also, to be fair to Moffat in his first series, why he tried to avoid referencing Russell T. Davis and a lot of the original series as well. To some degree, it was fairly forward thinking out of that, because I think at that point, he wanted to do something new. But come the anniversary year, something went wrong there. Yeah. Not that I'm saying the bits before were perfect, but something with that fan thing coming in started to really cause trouble.
Have you got a new take on this, Brian?
Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, the thing that still gets me is that companions nowadays, they have to have a tragic story. It can't be that they had their life enriched in some way and have decided, you know what, this is great, but it's time to let go of this. You know, I'm not immortal, essentially, like you. I can't live this life like you. when you look back through the new series of Doctor Who, Russell T. Davis and Moffat's era, only two companions have chosen to leave the Doctor, and that's Mickey and Martha. Everybody else has been forcibly removed, possibly killed, or killed and given an extra life, and then, you know, left to go live their impossible life or impossible dream somehow. And it doesn't make sense, because what he had here to do with Bill was a great opportunity to do an actual proper death, was to actually even make her choose that being human was okay. Even though, yes, we had that with Martha, fine. But there was a choice there to be outside the norm of the new series, and it just wasn't taken. And I don't see why humans can't go ahead and just make up their own minds. And I feel it's a shame. Like, yeah, the old series gets some slack for having married off a companion or two. And to be honest, I mean, I don't who actually did get married off. One of them was Joe, and then the other one was possibly Perry. You know, like we. Who knows if that Time Lord was lying to the Doctor or not? Maybe she really did die. You know, that's just like what James was saying right there with the draw your own conclusion. That's personally something how I feel, that it's kind of left like, oh, let me just appease the Doctor here, you know. But I don't know. I just feel it's a shame. Like, they're always trying to raise the stakes. It's the same thing that series 2, 3, and 4, and even when you get to 5 did of, okay, we have to beat the finale from last year. Rather than sitting there going, okay, we have to tell a good story. And I think that's where everything is lost. Everything is trying to beat something that came before rather than trying to tell a good story for that moment. You don't need to make a story super ultra grand. Everything's at stake, the biggest thing ever. And I think I brought this up in the podcast before, but comic books will do that. Comic books, one issue will be about the most massive thing in the hero's life. And then the next issue could be about saving that one little person from a robber on the street. But it will still be told in such an interesting way that it's a memorable issue. And they're just missing that. They're missing that mark completely. And I think that's what they need to do. I think they need to, and I'm going to say this phrase here, knowing all too well what it means for the new series, but I think they need to bring the show back to Earth a little bit. And obviously not the planet, but I mean, they need to ground it a little bit and realize that this week's story can be ultra grand and this week's story can just be about a little town that needs saving, you know. And if they still want to do something grand with the companions, make them choose to leave the Doctor because they found something better that they can do. You know, Nardole was basically strong-armed into helping this town. But what if it was his choice from the beginning? What if he said, Doctor, I've been with you all this time, but this is something I feel I have to do. That would have been a great end for Nardole. Then we would have all sat there and understood why the Doctor left at the end and forgot about Bill and Nardole. He probably would have thought Bill died with him on that planet, because how would she have survived the explosion that killed all the other Cybermen? And the people on that ship are okay. Nardole is going to do what he can. I've done all I can. It's time for me to move on. You know, they could have done the same thing with Bill. Bill could have even been a Cyberman and say, yeah, I've got to stand here. I'm all these people have got. You know, some choice should have been made to make it different from the past. And instead, it was identical to the previous year. And that's my take on it. So there
this
you go.
This is going to be an interesting thing for Christmas, is you've got a two-pronged fork here, where you could quite obviously Christmas could wrap up some of the things of the episode, given that if they have dropped it into 1986, 10th Planet, you could actually wrap some of this stuff up with Mondasian Cybermen. But at the same time, you're starting again to go into a very convoluted point where there shouldn't be that much time to do anything. Unless, of course, I suppose Capaldi can take the Hartnell Doctor and his TARDIS, and they can do lots of things in between the point. I'm beginning to wonder whether they're going to do something which actually creates Hartnell's regeneration. Suddenly sprung to my mind that maybe Moffat's thinking, his regeneration was actually that. It was a bit downbeat and wasn't particularly explosive and exciting. Maybe we need to have him get shot by a Cyberman or something too, which therefore, you know, are they... And I don't want it to go down that route. So in a weird way,
I was just going to say, if he does that, he's going to even undo what he did in the 50th by having the War Doctor use the same damn line, you know, basically his whole body's wearing a bit thin.
Yeah.
You know, like you're just going to make them regenerate because of old age. That's okay. That's what Time Lords are supposed to do. They're not supposed to get shot and die all the time.
But
you know, that's
fine.
Supposed to be okay.
Because as the Doctor leaves the Hartnell one dying like that, he can be catapulted through a time vortex into the War Doctor's TARDIS with a Cyberman who can then shoot the War Doctor as well and therefore negate that issue, and so it can be symmetried again.
Yeah,
and then he
can
head back.
You
know, how you can just Swiss cheese the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm just beginning to think, is that going to be the intent here? Is this going to be is this to give Hartnell a better ending as well? I don't know. I'm just kind
do
of...
Go on.
No, I just don't know where... Are they going... Because it just seems a bit odd that you do the Mondasian Cybermen and then you go to Hartnell, which has just dealt with Mondasian Cybermen. Is there going to be a link there? Does that explain why this is feeling so half-finished? Are we going to somehow see Nardole in this next one, even though he's meant to finish? Man. Is that going to be... And if they do that, like I said, is this again just becoming the same thing where the legacy of the show is mashing up the ability to tell a good story?
Do you know what I would like to see in this? I would like to see... Okay, so I kind of don't want to see them wrap up what happened in the last episode, to be honest, because I don't want to see another Time of the Doctor where Moffat's like, oh, shit, I've got, like, what, a billion threads left dangling. Let me go ahead and try and wrap them all up in one episode, you know? But it would be nice if they did kind of save Nardole and the humans. Leave Bill alone. Maybe somehow the Doctor can have an inkling of what happened to her, something like that, and show the glimmer of that he understands that. I think it would be great to see the Doctor see himself and realize, like, okay, the Doctor starts talking negatively about life. Like, here's the First Doctor going, maybe I'm afraid to regenerate too. I've never done it before. This is my first time. I don't know what to expect. And here's Peter Capaldi saying, hey, I've done it loads of time. Let me tell you, it hurts. It sucks. People don't remember you. You know, people don't appreciate you and everything. And he's telling him, and maybe he's getting him down to the point that all of a sudden the First Doctor starts telling him, you know what, maybe you're right. Maybe this should end. Maybe we should stop. Maybe you shouldn't regenerate. Maybe this should be the end of us. We should have an end too. We can stop. And then there's Peter Capaldi considering this, thinking that, you know, I should end. I should be allowed to die. That's something I should be allowed to do. I shouldn't always have to be the one to save the universe. And then this may be a terrible idea to most, but I kind of think it would be the only way to save things right now. Boom. The mask comes off. The First Doctor is not the First Doctor. It's John Simms' master. He's trying to make the Doctor force himself to die. There you go. That's my idea for Christmas. Oh, my God. Can you imagine that for Christmas?
Die, Doctor!
Depressing.
Die. Well, if it's your last episode, you could just do anything. You could pull Richard Hurdle, could just pull his mask off, and it's a Dalek head underneath it, or... I don't know.
No, wait. No, you have
an invasion Cyberman.
You have David Bradley there, like go to pull his mask off, and all he does is pull the wig off. And then the Doctor, then Peter Capaldi's like, wait, I don't remember wearing a wig. Oh my goodness, my life has been a lie.
Or Atric. Oh, he's Atric. So he's a good one.
Oh God, yeah.
Pull the mask off. No, I don't. It's Atric.
I don't know. It's going to be a difficult one with Christmas. Like, I want it to be the First Doctor done well, but I'm afraid it's not. Although, those closing moments, he was doing much better as the First Doctor than he did in the documentary, or the biopic, I guess. But and I don't mean that rudely, because he was playing Hartnell before. I just felt I got more of a Doctor sense in those closing moments of this last night's episode. So who knows? Maybe it'll be good, but I don't have confidence in the writing. I just don't have confidence in the writing.
Well, we'll leave it there. Yeah. We will leave it there, dear listener. Do you have confidence in the writing? Let us know on Facebook. Let us know on Twitter. If you would be so kind as to give us a review on iTunes, I will come round and bring a bottle of Krabby's to your house just for that.
Do you know what I miss?
Nothing I've just said is actually contractually obligated. And sorry, what do you miss?
I miss because we used to do this and you got bored with it. But I miss you asking us what we're watching right now, because that was a that was a good segment.
I got bored with that. Okay.
You got bored with it. Yeah. We planned. Yeah, we planned these lists, and then you were just like, no, I want to talk about the North.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just say. So yeah, just do all those feedbacky things for us, please. And the iTunes thing's really cool if you could do that. And also, we've got an Instagram page in which. Feed in which I share sci-fi general beyond cast over stuff. James, what have you been watching on telly lately?
I was watching Life on Mars. today.
Were you indeed?
And yesterday, yeah. I can't think what sort of drove me to watch Life on Mars.
Nor can I. Did you start from the beginning or series two?
I did, yeah. I started to try and start from episode two because I didn't think I could take watching the pilot again. But then I had to. I don't know why. And I've really just enjoyed watching
this. Have you watched the first episode a lot?
I have watched the first episode a lot. With different people as well who've started to come into it, and I've sat and watched it with them. Incidentally, last week's episode I watched three times, I think, three and a half times, because I watched it with one other person. I watched it again myself, and I watched bits of it as well. So, you know, just to sort of say, I know we rag on about a lot of his stuff.
Well, yeah, this is the other thing.
I
watched the cliffhanger several times. I didn't watch the full episode, but I did watch the cliffhanger several times. And, you know, Brian and I talked at length about the episode last week, and we both thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was nice to have proper hard sci-fi in Doctor Who as well, like it's a hard sci-fi concept. Brian, what have you been watching recently?
Nothing. I'll tell you what, honestly, I think we talked about this like an episode or two ago, but my wife and I are still checking out. The big thing we've been watching right now is the big fat quiz shows, all those different ones. We like the celebrity panel shows. Yeah, we're hooked on that stuff. I know it's overdone, but we've been watching.
I watched a little bit of The Crystal Maze yesterday.
We watched that.
With Richard Ayoade, how was it?
Yeah, which was, he was amusing, but it reminded me that I only used to watch The Crystal Maze because, again, it goes back to that adage of the of linear television that you never had to be great. You just had to be better than the shit that was on the other side.
Yeah.
And The Crystal Maze is very much like that. When you're watching, you can feel yourself being drawn back in time to a time where
it was always on opposite local news, wasn't it?
Well, that's what it means. There's nothing else to watch. And it's a nice idea. And Richard O'Brien did a great job. And Richard is doing a great job in this new version. But it's still like watching people bumble around games for an hour.
The thing I said about it was that it was fun because it was a quote celebrity edition, even though some of them were like reality TV stars and so on.
Yeah.
which I'm sorry, I don't personally count that as celebrity, but
no.
It was fun for that because everybody was able to ham it up, which is what's good about the celebrity panel shows. They can ham it up versus watching a game show of like some nervous normal person sitting there trying to win money. You know what I mean? It just doesn't sit quite as well. But I'll check it out. I'll check out another one. We liked it enough to check out another one. We'll see how it is with regular people versus celebrities. But yeah, it was entertaining. Richard's always entertaining.
Brian, have you seen Would I Lie to You?
Yes. We've been watching some Would I Lie to You.
Okay.
Was it Something I Said? What was the other one? We loved the fake news show, which seems to be done now. I think Was It Something I Said was also like one season like 4 years ago, and we're bummed by that because we enjoyed that one.
I've never seen that one, but what Would I Lie to You, I think probably the gold card in celebrity panel games.
It's definitely a good one. Yeah, it's a fun one, and I'll tell you what, it's also really fun because since they are majority actors, or at least entertainers in some way, it's really good to sit there and try and actually figure out if they're lying or not. Like, they're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You know, they're damn good. But yeah, no, that one's a good one. We enjoy that one.
That is good.
It's the ultimate battle between the North-South divide as well, isn't it?
with Lee Mack and
David
Mitchell.
David Mitchell. He's not a comedian. He's just very, very angry.
Well, he's not even angry. He's just cross.
Not angry.
He hasn't quite reached angry, has he? He's just cross. Yeah.
But it is amusing when he does reach angry. And it's never funny, but it's not meant to be because he is angry. the two of them face off really well. So that's always a good one to watch. Scripted stuff. I've been watching Archer, which on Netflix. Been enjoying that in 30-minute breaks. Mm. You know, 30-minute episodes. That's always a bit of a laugh. I actually started to try to start Game of Thrones again.
Right.
So
from the beginning,
from the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, on to about episode 7, I think.
Yeah.
So, go on.
It's good stuff, Game of Thrones. I enjoy Game of Thrones. I mean, I haven't really been watching anything since the second series of The Man in the High Castle Tower, finished on Amazon. But, you know, there's a new series of Game of Thrones starting in a couple of weeks.
Did we ever do a Ripper Street commentary?
No, we didn't.
We need to do that because it's on BBC One now, isn't it? So
Maybe we can do it next week.
Yeah, because I think we need to talk about that because that was a bit mind blowing. So yeah, that That was.
So that might be coming up. Two things that we do have coming up for you, dear listener, are on Beyond Casterbus rather than on the podcast with a K, because we're going to take a little break from the podcast with a K. We have got a Flash Gordon podcast.
Oh yeah, that's a while ago.
Which I'm looking forward to because I'm not in it. So I'm really looking forward to this one. So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. Dear listener, let us know what you think of the Doctor Falls and Doctor Who Series 10 and any other thoughts that you have going forward towards Christmas and beyond into the era of Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.
This is a Beyond Casterbus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbus.com.